This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit mensteeclinic.com.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
We're back here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan. Corey Majors alongside the Hall of Famer. I was going to say two-time, but is there a third one? There's a third.
There's a third one.
When will the fourth one happen, Mr. Chris Arnold?
As we speak.
No, all right.
I have no idea. Just like the third one, I never knew that all of a sudden I'm in the Texas Boxing Hall of Fame.
And that is, man, there it is. Alec Medford also on the show with us today, all week as well, and Alec will be driving you around this week as well, so be prepared for that. Now, guys, Cowboys did not give up, all right? They did not give up yesterday. And I guess the question is, from the 877-881-1053, do you respect it or hate it? It sounds like Bobby hates it. It sounds like Bobby hates everything about what the Cowboys are doing right now. But where are you right now, Tolo's Cowboys fans that are out there? Because it sounded like there were some cheers last night when Cowboys did good things last night.
It's tough because I want to watch good football the rest of the year. I just want entertaining football. Win, lose, or draw, I just want to have fun watching the games. But at the same time, whenever you find out, what, like an hour or two before kickoff, that, hey, you're done. You're not going anywhere. And Jerry's talking on pregame that, you know, it feels like we lost somebody. When I sat down with Mike McCarthy, the emotions, we were just so flat. And it's like, well, why don't you show me something different then? You know, because at this point, you're just losing the draft position. I know we've talked about that, the morality of being mad about that versus wanting to win the games. But it's like, what good does 9-8 get you? What good does, you know, the opposite 8-9 get you? I don't know what they want to see. I'm intrigued to ask Stephen Jones, like, at this point, when you know there's nothing to gain, what are you looking for? Like, for me, I kind of want to see what some of the other guys have, which I know Mickey Spagnuolo would tell you, well, they're already playing all the other guys, but guys, like, you saw Andrew Booth get some reps. Like, what can he give me? Can we get Tyler Guyton to start the whole game at left tackle and see what he gives you? Like, I'm glad that they're trying to an extent where I am seeing some things from some players that I want to see improvement from, but at the expense of bettering your team and, you know, for Bobby Belt's sake, maybe getting your head coach another contract, it might not be the best thing. So I'm kind of 50-50. It's like, it's cool to see them win because I don't expect them to win any week. I see them as underdogs every single game they play the rest of the season just because of everything that's happened to this point. But I got to admit, it is kind of cool when you see a team like Tampa Bay, who I think is way better than they played yesterday.
I agree.
I really do. And the way that they shut down Mike Evans, like it felt like he was a non-factor for most of the game.
Yeah.
It's like they executed the way they said they did, or they wanted to. You saw Micah Parsons talking with Tony Dungy on the TV broadcast before the game. He said, what's the key to the game? What was your speech this week? And he said, shut down Mike Evans. What did they do? They shut down Mike Evans. So at least they're doing what they say they're going to do. They're backing up their words for the most part. But at this point, I just kind of want to get to the offseason and see what kind of chaos happens.
I can understand that. CA?
It's real simple. They set up McCarthy to fail. And guess what they haven't done? They haven't failed. And when I say they set him up, think about it. If they had done what they normally do in the offseason, which is some everything in team building. Team building is more than just the draft. It's more than just trades. It's more than just signing free agents. It's all of the above. And if you go 12-5, 12-5, 12-5, And we know the disaster would happen in the Green Bay playoff game. We know that. That was a failure on all levels. But what do? They did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, okay, how can you blame McCarthy for that? And then guess what he starts doing? He starts winning 4 out of the last 5 games. And more importantly, never lost the locker room. If you look at the Jets and you look at the Giants, those organizations are screwed because they don't have cohesion in the locker room. They don't have cohesion with the front office. So in other words, you're able to compare the Cowboys now to some disasters. Had the Cowboys front office gone about business like they normally had, and McCarthy can't get out of the first round like he had in the other 12 and 5 seasons, he's gone like Garrett. Because it's like, wait a minute, where's the payoff? And see where I say they set him up for failure, and I've been saying it all season long. This team is built wrong. It's built wrong because the assignment for the core group of veterans and the coaching staff is get out of the freaking first round. Mm-hmm. That's been the assignment since Garrett was here. Mm-hmm. Get out of the freaking first round. And McCarthy, by the way, is 1-3 in the playoffs. The only victory is over Tom Brady's Tampa Bay Bucks, where people forget they were 8-9 that year, even though they won that division. But back to the assignment, get out of the freaking first round. They're not built right because guess what you did? You let the depth walk away. Then you did not sign any free agents, Derrick Henry. You didn't do any trades. All you said is we're going to draft and develop. And you drafted guys who you expected to have immediate impact. We're talking about all of them. It doesn't happen. Rookies will be rookies. So you're watching on-the-job training when the assignment for the masses, the core group of veterans, and the coaching staff is get out of the freaking first round. He was set up for failure. And guess what? Now certain fans who like to team build, because team building is a sport, they're all mad because guess what? We don't have our draft position.
Mm-hmm.
They were better than we expected them to be. That's not McCarthy's fault. That wasn't his assignment. His assignment was to get out of the freaking first round, and then you throw in the injuries too?
Mm-hmm.
You can't fire that coach when there are not other replacements available who could do that same job.
The way that they played last night, I have a ton of respect for.
You have to.
And it's the toughness of CeeDee Lamb getting out there and, I mean, fighting mm-hmm. through what he's dealing with. I respect that. I respect the way that defense was hitting last night. Look, man, that was one of the best defensive efforts I've seen all season.
And
from
most
this group.
Of the big Pro Bowl players are hurt, except for Micah.
And that is part of a bunch of young guys that are looking for it, going, I can get a job.
Mm-hmm,
you know, sure. This is my chance to shine. This is my chance to show what I got.
And that's actually part of team building as well, because you have to decide who are guys who can do it. Who are guys that are just making business decisions, and who are guys who give a damn?
Mm-hmm. And then the other part of it, though, is, yes, when it comes to McCarthy's job, which I think should be discussed mostly at the end of the year, but it's been discussed all year long.
All year long. It was discussed
before the season. We knew it was going to be a big topic all year, but one of the factors is that he was supposed to get out of the first round.
Mm-hmm.
He has yet to do that. However, with that package, you said quarterback who has yet to get out of there with this coach, we're signing you for a long-term deal. Wide receiver who has yet to do that, we're signing you for a long-term deal. But the coach is the one that gets left out. That's a little weird to me. If you've been that successful and still unable to do it while you're keeping one over the other, you're just saying that it's just the coaching constantly and that's where the blame goes. Although those guys have been through a couple of different ones. That being said, last night's effort, I have a ton of respect for. I don't hate it at all. Anybody that's really upset about it right now can be upset about the draft pick part of it. I don't know what it does for them. I don't know what it takes away for them either. I just know that whenever I watch football, I want to see a better product. And last night I got a good product, and that's what I was looking forward to.
One thing real quick about the draft pick, because again, tanking or trying to get a higher draft pick, that's a strategy. And it's only a part of the equation.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I'm not talking about you personally. I'm talking about all the people who say, man, we could have had a higher pick. How do you know you would have gotten the right pick?
Maybe.
You'd have made the right choice. And let me say this. There's always going to be people who love the process of projecting and the combine. And let me be involved with looking at college guys and saying who I think should be a draft pick. They want to go ahead and move the process forward. Meanwhile, you're forgetting about trades, you're forgetting about free agents, and you're forgetting about who's competitive.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about who can. All those things are huge. Just to focus only on the draft, you're being selfish. Just like somebody saying, I don't care if the team won or lost, my fantasy guy. I don't care about your fantasy guy.
The obviously, Alec, the discussion of quality opponents over the last five games is there. It exists. That conversation is part of it. But Tampa Bay is a potential playoff team right now. And they've been that. They've been a plucky team all season long that kind of is. You were looking at this weeks ago going, I don't know if you can beat Tampa Bay. And now you get this win last night. You can say, oh, well, the groups they've gone up against haven't been that good. There's still two more games for the Cowboys to, you know, continue to do that. Still two more opportunities for them to go out there and beat Washington, beat Philly. And then you're going to go, well, Washington wasn't even trying. They were already in the playoffs. Philly wasn't trying. They'd already won the division. And so forth. So that part of that conversation is going to exist. At the end of the year is when, if I'm Steven, if I'm Jerry, I sit back and go, okay, what was the most important thing to me? And did they accomplish that thing? Kevin pointed out about a month ago, there was a list of about four or five things that Jerry had said. We need this. For the most part, you're seeing that they're still competitive. And I think that's what keeps drawing it back to it. Are they coaching them well? They feel better about it. The players that they gave them and the rookies, Tyler Guyton, I know you said you want to see him play a full game. He needs work, and he needs to somehow, he needs to be able to get past, not lose his confidence before the season's over. That's what I'm hopeful of, is just don't lose the confidence, because you got a lot of work in the offseason. Last night, there were a couple of bad plays from Tyler Guyton, and I expected more out of him coming out of Oklahoma this year. I expected a lot more. Maybe it was too much, though. But I have a ton of respect for the way that the guys on the field put their effort out last night.
I think we all kind of pinned too much expectation, really just on the overall first round draft pick of the Dallas Cowboys every single year.
Makes
just
sense.
Because they put themselves in a position, they're so okay with being right on the edge to where they need a guy that can come in and play day one when he's being drafted in the 20s.
Yep.
You know, he's not even a top 10 draft pick, but he is in the first round, so you're saying he's got to be talented enough to go day one. Tyler Guyton is talented enough to go day one. He is not experienced enough to go day one, and that's why I want to see him get these reps. And like you said, Corey, there were some really bad plays from him last night, but how do you correct those? Go out there and remember those mistakes that you made. Add those to your keys. Get screamed at by the offensive line coaches on the sideline after the next possession, and just go fix it. I want to see that. I hate the revolving door of the veteran guy that probably won't even be on the team next year in Chuma Adoga. I want to see a guy that has another 4 years left on this team. And I want to see some of these other guys, even on the defense. Like, I thought you got a lot of good things from Nick Vigil, who he was a guy drafted in 2016 in the third round. He's played on a different team every single year of his career. And I thought he did really good things for you in place of Eric Kendricks yesterday. Is he going to be a franchise cornerstone? No, but I want to see more from him. I want to see more of Marist Liafau, which week one, everyone thought was interesting. He was listed as a starter on the depth chart week one, and it's for good reason. He runs around like his hair is on fire. I'm telling you, there's something about guys like that.
You just like him for his hair.
Well, yes, it is absolutely wonderful. And
so then, because you just named off a bunch of defensive players, and you named off Booth earlier too. Then, based on this kind of defensive turnaround, you're happy to welcome Mike Zimmer back?
And see, that's what complicates all of
us. At this point, I think he's done enough to where I wouldn't be mad at it. Am I jumping up, clicking my heels? No, but I'm happy because you're getting, one, consistency, and two, he has proven enough to me. Ever since the bye week, it's looked like a different team. I mean, you hear it from Bobby and Broadus all the time. You're seeing Micah Parsons lining up as a defensive tackle, as a true, like, one tech sometimes.
Dude's exhausted, too.
And he's exhausted. Like, he's still giving you everything, but you're seeing a willingness from a Micah Parsons to move out of position, to drop back in coverage as a true linebacker over the middle of the formation. Like, you're seeing different looks, the sim pressures. It was funny. I was watching with my buddies at a bar last night, and somebody asked me, he was like, hey, do you want Mike Zimmer back next year? I was like, I really like the sim pressures that he's doing. The very next play, he shows six across the defensive line. Two of them drop back in coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Sim pressure. Right as I say, I like the sim pressures that he's running because it's giving offenses different looks that they're not expecting. They do that, and it's an incomplete pass by Baker Mayfield because he was expecting six, but he actually has everybody in coverage.
And that's good. That's what makes this so complicated because, again, everybody likes what they see at Zimmer now, but back in September, nobody liked what they saw. because they were getting blown out and they had all the guys healthy. But guess what they were doing? They were learning a brand new defense. So what complicates, just throw out McCarthy and his coaching staff. Mike Tirico was on with Sean RJ last Thursday, and he broke this down so well because it's more complicated than the average person would think. And that's because, okay, your defensive coordinator, you're buying into it, just like the team's buying into it. Mike has started buying into it because, remember, he's DQ guy, right? He's buying into Zim because Zim had to prove it. It's all working very, very well. As for McCarthy, people are saying, well, McCarthy, you know, he doesn't call the plays well, whatever. Guess what? Last year, when he called the plays, not Kellen Moore, remember, they got rid of Kellen Moore. Kellen Moore walked everyone aside. He started calling the plays. Dak Prescott comes in number two in the MVP vote. The offense is top five offense, leads the NFL in touchdowns. This is Mike McCarthy calling the plays. No coach is ever going to be perfect unless they win the Super Bowl and everybody forgets everything you did bad, Andy Reid, in Philadelphia. You see where I'm going with this? The whole point I'm trying to make is you have to see who's still out there. If Bill Belichick were still out there, I'm not saying he's the perfect fit, but it's probably the better fit for a Jerry, because Jerry always says he ain't got time for a bad time. At his age, he's not going to look at some young guy, Ben Johnson up there in Detroit, and let him learn on the job like he did with Garrett. That's not going to happen.
You got a valid point there.
And so you also got to look at, okay, you get rid of McCarthy. If you bring in somebody, are you going to let them bring in their own defensive coordinator, own offensive coordinator, or however you want to do it? There's something to be said on the whole staff.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that McCarthy has a group of players that have yet to quit on him, including the veterans. And the young, again, the whole selling point was get out of the first round. They set the team, they set the coach up and the team up to not follow that plan. When you said, okay, we're going to look at rookies, like you're in wanting to see all rookies right now. If going into the season, that's what you thought it was going to be, maybe you'd have more tolerance for what they were doing.
Yeah, they definitely were looking like they were training for somebody else to be coached by them at some point. That was definitely a look that you were getting right there. Well, that's Cowboys right there. Two more weeks of this, and I feel like there's going to be some more roller coasters.
Because
back
you don't
and forth
know what's going to happen.
Have no clue. We're the KNC Masterpiece here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, let's talk with our friend Mike Bacsik about what the Rangers just did next on The Fan. Back here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan, and the Texas Rangers have done.
Football fans, do you want to hear the whole unadulterated truth about where your team stands?
It's the most embarrassing film I have ever watched in my entire life.
Former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth gives his perspective on the top storylines and games on a weekly basis on the Stinkin' Truth Podcast.
You may get out of here with two sacks and a tackle for loss, but you're getting out with a bloody nose.
New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday.
It's going to be a street fight.
Make sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Some significant work, and man, as the home of the Rangers and the baseball show of record, we felt that it was our obligation to ensure that you get the best quality baseball talk you can find, and that is why we reached out to our good friend Michael Bacsik, who is on vacation this week, but said, you know what, guys, screw it, I want to be on radio. Mike, how's it going, man?
Awesome, man. Just got off the Peloton. Cut the ride a little short. Just going to be honest. Cut the ride about 5 minutes short to make sure that I'm ready to go.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that, man. I really do appreciate that. And I still get to say see you next year at the end of this thing. All right, Mike. So which one do you want to talk about first? Do you want to talk about Nate Lowe or do you want to talk about the addition of Jock Peterson?
Well, let's talk about the loss of Nate Lowe. Let's just go in kind of the order it happened, because I was a little bit surprised by the Nate Lowe trade. And if you remember, Corey, we were talking, I don't know, let's say it was 2 weeks ago. You know, you kind of forget the rumors, but when Chris Young came out and said, hey, we're looking for another left-handed batter.
Yes.
And I thought, ooh, why? You have Corey Seager, you have Nate Lowe, you have Evan Carter, who really struggles against lefties early in his career. And pretty much I would say Jonah Heim is a left-hand hitting catcher. I know he's a switch hitter, don't get me wrong. But a lot of times if a lefty's going to pitch, those were days that maybe you would give him off to get your other catcher in there, give him a day off. So I'm like, you have four lefties in your lineup, and you really have to protect one of them in Evan Carter because of – and I'll say this, Leody Taveras is a left-handed hitter too, right-handed. You know, he can struggle tremendously as a switch hitter. So I'm looking at it the other night going, Well, son of a gun, man. I Nate Lowe, if we compare him to Will Clark, if we compare him to Rafael Palmeiro, if we compare him to Mark Teixeira, if we compare him to kind of former Ranger greats that were first basemen, his numbers don't stack up tremendously well.
Right.
But if you look at Nate Lowe compared to what first basemen do in today's game, because it's really weird. We've talked about this on how first baseman offensive numbers have gone down recently. Nate Lowe is a very good hitting first baseman in the American League. Yeah, Vladdy Jr., way better. There are certain guys that are better, but he finishes top five in almost every statistical category from an offensive perspective at first base. So I was surprised that Chris Young traded him, but I didn't know he had Joc Pederson up his sleeve.
Okay, and we'll get to Joc in just a moment too, Mike, but when it comes to Nate Lowe, that dude, I will give him a ton of credit. A, won a World Series, but B, also was not known as a defensive first baseman when he got here and worked very hard on his defense. And then on top of that was a very productive part at times for what turned out to be a World Series champion. Didn't he have like an 18 pitch at bat that really took things to the next level against Houston? So I'm going to miss him. It was nice to have him, but I understood kind of the direction they were looking at there.
Yeah, he was a great personality too. I mean, we've got to know him in spring training. I got to know him traveling with the team. He's a really fun, loving guy. He's a guy that probably keeps the clubhouse loose. He's a guy that I know keeps the media loose. He is a good personality and a good teammate, and he will be missed. But I think this goes to, they didn't play 500 baseball last year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in the end, in September, they played better, and I get it. Like, people stopped paying attention. They weren't in a race. The Cowboys had started, and I'm not asking people to pay attention to September baseball if the Rangers are dead and gone out of a playoff race, and most people stopped following it. He had a nice September. He improved his numbers, but I think Chris Young looked at it, like I talked about the other day, and now Chris Young doesn't have a defending world champion. He doesn't have a team that made it to the playoffs. And I think Chris Young, I'll compare it to a little bit of this, the Philadelphia Eagles. He's like, I don't care what they did in 2023 now. That is, I think, to Chris Young, I'm not going to say completely dead and gone, but he's changing the team. We're seeing where he feels like he can change the team, and he's changing to see if it can be better than 2024 and not just relying on 2023.
I love that analysis. And, Mike, you were talking about his personality, and everybody loved his personality, especially when he popped on the radio and you could kind of feel the guy. Is that – I don't know for a fact, and maybe you do – is that kind of like the personality that Berger's bringing, that they brought in Berger?
I think that's a good thought, Chris, is that
– clubhouse guy?
Yeah, I think we got to interview Jake Berger last week, and he was awesome, and we've heard great things. Obviously, Skip Schumacher, who's now part of the front office, who was the manager in Miami, knows him well.
Mm-hmm.
I do think this – and I know being around the team, and I brought this up to Chris Young in Seattle, kind of the last road trip of the year, one of the last road trips of the year. And I was kind of like, are you guys missing, not talent-wise, but are you guys missing on this team a kind of Ian Kinsler type of personality? And the best way I can describe Ian Kinsler, and I think his teammates would describe him this way, is
competitive.
F that other team, F that pitcher, F everybody else. We're going to kill them. I don't care who's on the mound. I don't care who we're playing. I don't care where we're at. We are better. I am better. And let's go stick it up somebody's rear.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that kind of, you know, I'm trying to take out cuss words, but obviously
right.
There's a lot of cussing in sports. But like,
right.
Now, Nate Lowe is not that personality. I don't know if Jake Berger's that personality. Like you said, Jake Berger kind of maybe that fun-loving, mm-hmm. keep things loose type of guy. You need guys that keep things loose. And it's tough to criticize a team that won a World Series in 2023. But I just, sometimes being around the team, I'm like, they need that guy that everybody you play against hates, but everybody on your team says that's our guy and we love him the most.
Mm-hmm.
So I love what you're talking about personality, Chris, because I do think every team, especially once you get to a team of 25 or more football, obviously 50-something or more, is you need different personalities to motivate teammates in different ways. And I do think Berger might take that Nate Lowe personality and bring it there. I don't know Joc Pederson well. I know that obviously Corey Seager does. They played together on the LA Dodgers. But I'm hoping that Jock Peterson might have a little bit of that Ian Kinsler personality.
Mike, before we get to Peterson, I do want to talk about what you got back from the Nate Lowe trade. Is Robert Garcia, the lefty, bullpen arm. He's a guy that's heavy on the four-seam change and slider, but I don't know if you got to watch much of him. I watched a little bit of him last night, and something that stuck out on the Baseball Savant is that he's actually really high in Major League Baseball in chase percentage. He's in the 94th percentile with a 33.6% whiff percentage. So what have you seen? What have you maybe heard? And do you like this addition, a lefty that could play as a leverage guy?
Well, I would say if we're just looking at talent for talent, Nate Lowe is more talented than Garcia and is a much more valuable player because he's an everyday first baseman and you're getting a lefty reliever. I do think this was, in a way, a trade to open up the money to bring in Jock Peterson. So I'm not saying I dislike Garcia. We will see. Relievers are so tough to, like, say, oh, I know what he's going to be year in and year out, especially when you don't have a lot of, let's say, innings pitched and you're not 32 years old and you've thrown in 500 major league games. So Garcia to the Rangers, I assume, has a lot of potential. They think that they can get more out of him. I believe he threw 295 changeups last year and all 295 were against right-handed hitters. So he is a two-pitch pitcher. And what I mean by that is he's going to be predominantly a fastball changeup guy to righties and then a fastball breaking ball guy to lefties. His numbers are okay, but I'm assuming this. The Rangers see that they have control over a left-handed relief pitcher for the next 4 to 5 years, and they believe that he can improve, and they believe that this gives them depth, along with Milner, who they picked up, who is also a fastball changeup guy. So this is a little bit weird when you start looking at the Rangers lefty-on-lefty guys. And in fact, I want to say Milner is better against righties than he is lefties. I was looking over splits last night, and I need to kind of relook at them to kind of, I say, memorize them to kind of ingrain them in my head. So I'm not talking so much off the top of my head. But I look at, they picked up two lefties who are both fastball changeup guys who have a breaking ball and who aren't lefty on lefty super specialists, which is fine. You have to pitch against righties in today's game because of the three batter minimum. But I think that Chris Young is looking for depth. He doesn't want to go into spring training, and let's just take Jacob Latz, who had a good start to the season, but not a great finish to the season. Obviously he got sent down to the minors and stayed down in the minors. And then Walter Pennington, who they got from Kansas City in the Michael Lorenzen trade. I don't think he wanted to rely on somewhat inexperienced lefties. So now he's brought in two lefties who are experienced. So now they have four to compete for at least two jobs, maybe three. I still don't love this bullpen. I think Chris Young still needs a closer. I'm hoping Kirby Yates. And I'm still looking at maybe adding a setup guy who I like.
Okay, I'm glad you brought up Yates' name because I had that listed down there. The money that was moved around, it looks like the money got put into Jock Peterson's pile. Does that take away from the chance of getting Kirby Yates, in your opinion? Or, I mean, because that's been somebody, you love what he did last year, and you've been like, we need to get that guy back.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I just remember, Corey, working with you, and we talked about, we saw that the Rangers had approximately, right, we don't know all the numbers and deferred money and whatever, is they had approximately $53 million to work with this offseason. And so we can kind of do basic math. And we can go with, well, if you look at your backup catcher, he took, I think, approximately $6 million away from that. If you look at Eovaldi, he took away $25 million of that. Now you have to go, oh, well, we got the money from Nate Lowe, but then you have to take the Jock Peterson contract into account. I guarantee you Chris Young in the front office knows exactly where they're at budget-wise and what they have left and what they need to do. So I hope that they don't go into this spring training, because I think this would be a bad idea to go, let's let Webb and Garcia and Milner and our young guys, whether it's Teoto, whether it's Leiter, whether it's, you know, I'm throwing out Cole Wynn, I'm not saying he will be, they're going to compete for the eighth and ninth inning jobs, and somebody and people will just rise to the top. I think that's a really bad idea. We've seen that with the Cowboys and going, we don't need wide receivers. Let's just throw out these five guys and the quarterback will just figure it out and we'll get a number one and we'll get a number two and we'll figure out who's three and four. And you're like, it's not a good idea. And I don't think it's a good idea. And I don't think Chris Young is done. But I do think that through listening to him on The Fan, he was very frustrated with last season. And we can see that he is doing quite a bit to this team to try to change it, not a lot, but change it enough that you feel like it's a different team going to spring training.
Last thing before we let you go here, Mike, how do you expect Joc Pederson to get used in this defense, and where would you put him in this lineup at the moment?
Great question.
Thank you.
He's only a DH. Literally, the last time he was an average defender was 2016. I mean, you want to? 2016 was Corey Seager's rookie year with the Dodgers. So, I mean, he cannot play defense. If you put him out there, it's going to bite you in the butt if you put him out there enough on defense. In the lineup, this is the interesting thing. This is where I'm like, I like, but I don't love. Joc Pederson can't hit lefties. Neither can Evan Carter right now. So now Bruce Bochy is going to have to go back to somewhat his National League days, and maybe he's the perfect manager for this, is you're going to have kind of a manager who manipulates lineups and changes it a lot because of Pederson and Carter. You're going to have to keep those two guys away from each other in the lineup, because the last thing you want is in the sixth inning, you are facing a righty, but they bring in a lefty, and you go, well, I don't want to take out Pederson and Carter yet, and then those are two automatic outs, let's just say. And then in the eighth inning, they come back up to bat, and they bring in another left-handed reliever, and now you're like, well, who do I bring in? And right now, I'd say Ezekiel Duran is going to play a major role on this team as of now, because Pederson and Carter don't really start against left-handed pitchers. And that's tough to have two guys in your lineup who cannot really hit left-handed pitching. So it's going to be interesting to see how Bochy and Young come up with a lineup, and then how they manipulate it. Because when lefties are pitching, and Leody Taveras does not hit good from the right side at all, so he's not really an answer to help you out with Carter. And so if I take Joc Pederson out, the answer would be Ezekiel Duran.
Yeah. And that dude could be a trade piece, right? Like, we're still trying to figure that out right now.
Yeah, so right now I feel like they really need a righty hitter to platoon with Joc Pederson, and maybe they'd believe it's Ezekiel Duran. I don't know.
Did you want to say anything about Ricky Henderson and your experience
you
with
got
him?
Him, man.
Dang, man. This one hurt a lot. I remember as a kid, I had his if you have to be 40-something, I think, or older to remember these posters, but Sports Illustrated / you could get them at Oshman's when I was a kid, would put out these posters, and one of the posters I had was Ricky Henderson in his Yankee jersey running to first base. He was my first ever favorite player. And then in 2007, I did get to meet Ricky Henderson, and it was awesome. And we were hanging out in a hotel, and, you know, he passed me, you know, a little smoke. And I was like, I've never done this before in my life, but this is the greatest leadoff hitter of all time, and he seems like an awesome dude. So
you had to do what you had to do.
I had to do what I had to do. And I will always say to this, I was like, I didn't notice any difference, but I didn't at that point in my life. I never really smoked anything. I've never smoked a cigarette in my life still to this day. So I'm like, I don't even know if I did it right. And I only took two puffs, and I was like, I'm good. Like, thanks, Ricky. Like, he passed it back to me. I'm like, I'm good, Ricky. Thanks. But I mean, Ricky Henderson, what a personality. And I'm so sad because, Chris, in Oakland, the last game ever, Ricky Henderson was there. And we were so busy getting ready for the telecast and you know, and I didn't go. Oh, and so many people wanted to see Ricky, right? I mean, Ricky Henderson Field last day, he was in such great shape. I mean, Chris, you're in great shape. You guys look the same as in shape and body wise. I can't believe the guy I saw at the end of September, who's in better shape than I am, like, died from pneumonia. Is that still what
I think that's what they're saying. I haven't heard the official
thing. I don't have that
but you know what's so crazy, like you say, in your mind you're probably saying, I'll catch him next time, because he's being mobbed right now.
He was my first ever favorite player in baseball. Odubbe McDowell was my first ever Ranger favorite player, and it really hurt. And then I know this is sports talk radio, have fun. You just start thinking about mortality. You just start thinking about your life. I'm 47 now, and he was 65, in better shape than I am. I'm like, do I only have 18 more years to live? What guarantees me 18 more years? So, you know, anyways, when kind of your heroes die, it hurts.
Yeah,
Mike, thank you for great hopping stuff, on man. With us and bringing down the room right here at the end. Really appreciate it, man.
You're welcome.
I look forward to seeing you next year, man.
Yeah, see you next year.
All right,
Mike.
Buddy. I'll see you next year.
Right, we'll see you, man.
Mike Bassick right here on 105.3 The Fan. As a matter of fact, we'll talk a little more Ricky Henderson next
worth it.
In Wanker of the Weekend. That's always worth it to hear that from Mike. We'll do that next right here on The Fan. Back here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan, it is time for Wanker of the Weekend. The people who were terrible over the weekend, and they deserve to be called out for it. We'll get into that in just a moment. Don't forget, on Friday, that is this Friday, we will be at Buffalo Wild Wings at Left Bank. That is out there in Fort Worth again. So Fort Worth, we're making sure we're doing our thing with you right there in your house. And we love it, man, because you know how I feel about Fort Worth. What are you making that look for?
I'm just concerned because they put a wing establishment in a bank. That don't sound right.
No, it's. I think I.
No,
you know
that
what,
side of the river.
Yeah, it's on that side of the river, a river bank. Alec.
Yeah, the one near 7th Street. Yeah.
Yeah, there
yeah,
you
I've
go.
Yeah, I've been to that one. That's cool.
I do have Alec Medford by my side today, along with Chris Arnold.
Got you
and
down.
James is in studio making sure we sound good inside of your ear holes today. Guys, it is time for Wanker of the Weekend, and we start off with death. Death is the Wanker of the Weekend.
Are you talking about the death that's got the sickle and he's got the hood and the robe? That death.
Yeah, I mean, if that's the vision.
Skeleton
looking
like a chill guy.
Yeah, if that's the vision of death. Do you think death ever takes a day off that he's just like, you know what?
He's always walking around somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Busy man. Very busy man. Well, he took Ricky Henderson from us. You just heard Mike Bassick's story about Ricky Henderson and the time that they partook together.
Yeah.
But I've heard a couple of other really good Ricky Henderson stories that I loved, and I wanted to play these. This is Harold Reynolds on MLB Network talking about winning the stolen base record for a year.
I won the stolen base title. It was the first and only time anybody in the 80s outside of Ricky won stolen base title. Ricky's still in 120, 110 a year. Ricky got hurt like in May, and I think he had like 30. So it comes down to the last day of the year. Willie Wilson has 59. I have 59. I steal a base. Willie Wilson goes 0 for 5. I win the title. Monday morning, phone rings. I go over and pick up the phone. Henderson here, because Ricky never speaks. He speaks in third person regardless. Henderson here. I said, hey, what's up, Rick? What's going on, man? He says, 60 stolen bases? You ought to be ashamed. Ricky has 60 at the All-Star break. Click. Hung up.
He just calls him up and he's like, you should be ashamed of yourself.
That all? 60?
60.
Ricky had 60 at the All-Star break.
Yeah, and by the way, when it comes to some of the numbers that Ricky Henderson put up,
man,
stolen base king, and it's not by a short distance.
Mm-mm.
He has 1,406 stolen bases. The next closest is Lou Brock at 938. Do you know how many? That's
500 more.
Yes. And Billy Hamilton, who played for the Reds, tried to get there. 914 was as close as he could get, and that's phenomenal there. So 1,406 stolen bases. And yeah, man, you go back and look, 100, 130, 108, 80, 87. And the next closest every year was 79, 54, 77, 50. Gary Pettis was great. Still, 37 behind Ricky Henderson when he was doing it. And he did steal, I think the number is he stole a marathon. Yeah.
Yeah, so Choppy said like 23 miles or something?
23.97 miles is, yeah. So
he's
that's
the ultimate thief.
Yeah, so that's pretty amazing. Yes, exactly. The only player to get 130. And he led Major League Baseball in steals at age 39. Now, CA, I think every Tolo out there and every one of the hosts up at this station looks at you and goes, how? How does that man stay so physically fit the way that he does? Do you think you could lead the Major League Baseball in stolen bases at 39 years old?
Hell no.
And that was only like 2 years ago for
only
you.
Only Ricky Henderson can Ricky Henderson.
Yeah.
I'm just a guy in shape. That's it.
This is one of my favorite stories because Will Clark's my favorite baseball player of all time. Like so having gotten to interview him a couple times has been the coolest thing. And
he's a great guy.
He is so much fun. This is Will Clark talking about a spring training game with Ricky Henderson.
Who was the best talker down at first base?
The best ever made me laugh all times because he talked in the third person was Ricky Henderson.
Henderson.
Ricky would come down there and Ricky would be like, Ricky here. Ricky, this is in spring training where we're playing the A's a bunch, right? And Ricky's down there. And La Russa puts the hold sign on because he wanted McGuire and Canseco to get some swings in. And you can just see Ricky wants to steal a bat. Ricky's getting pissed, you know? And I'm egging him on. I'm just egging him on.
I'm like, Ricky, you don't need to take that. Run, Ricky.
And he about two or three pitches later, he goes, oh, hell, thrill. He goes, Ricky gone. So I look at the dugout, right? And I go like this. I go, he's running, right? So sure enough, we pitch out, throw down to second base. Ricky slides in safe. He jumps up, and he goes, I told you, thrill. Ricky gone.
And that is, I love great storytellers like that for one, but that is a wonderful story right there. He once stole five bases in a game with zero at bats, which means he got walked every time. He's the career leader in unintentional walks, reached base 25 times in the 1989 postseason. Like that number right there, being on base that frequently when you got guys like McGuire and Canseco coming up after you is just off the charts. All-time leader in leadoff home runs, George Springer's 21 behind him. So he has 81 leadoff home runs, and I do remember that, like, being a constant on ESPN. Mm-hmm. When he would hit a home run to start off a game, they would just be like, and he does it again. And it just was like, that's just what he did. And then he hit a home run in 25 different seasons. What a naturally talented, gifted athlete that Ricky Henderson was.
This guy was a lifer. He was a baseball lifer. But he was really, really nice and down to earth. He's kind of like Wash. You know, everybody loves Wash, right? Everybody loved Ricky. And again, it wasn't about an ego thing saying Ricky did this and Henderson that. He just never really liked to say I or me. And I was fortunate enough to cover him all these years from 1980 all the way till he officially retired when anybody wanted him anymore in like the mid-2000s. Dude was just a great guy. And he had like, I want to say, four stints with the Oakland A's. So he's always coming to Arlington for one reason or another, playing for somebody. He's played for the Red Sox. He played for Toronto, I mentioned earlier. I was covering the World Series, and he was on base when Joe Carter hit that epic walk-off home run for the Blue Jays, and he won his second ring there, won the first ring with Oakland. And he also played with the Dodgers for like half a season. I want to say the Dodgers picked him up after the All-Star break because he was playing in like, not a minor league team, but, you know, like one of those fun teams. You know, like Grand Prairie's got a fun team or something. He was playing for one of those fun teams, and they picked him up, and he actually had, I want to say, like 20 stolen bases. Seriously.
Yeah. Man.
20 or 30. And then nobody picked him up again, but he was still playing baseball in some random outlet somewhere.
Pointed out, don't forget Nolan Ryan struck out Ricky Henderson in his 5,000th strikeout. I do remember that. I actually have the newspaper from that because he had a unique stance. Alec, mm-hmm. I know I take too many shots at your height and I will stop, but he tried to be your height because he wanted to make the strike zone so small. Like that was his stance, was to try and make the strike zone small. And I remember them showing the pitch locations on it. And I was like, this is the coolest graphic ever. But the biggest thing for me, who was the most exciting defensive player for the Rangers ever, was Pudge Rodriguez.
Yes.
Because Pudge could throw people out.
Yes.
And everybody wants to see number one versus number one, strength versus strength. Mm-hmm. Everybody wanted to see Pudge and Ricky Henderson. I need Ricky Henderson to get on base so I can see if he tries to steal and if Pudge can throw him out. 1991, Pudge did what other catchers could not do, and threw Ricky Henderson out twice in the same game.
Wow. That's why Pudge is in the Hall of Fame, too.
Twice in the same game, that's he was able insane. To get Ricky Henderson.
And that's insane. You mentioned that stat about Nolan. We got a Tolo texted in the way Ricky would say this. No. It wasn't Nolan Ryan striking out Ricky Henderson for his 5,000 strikeout. Ricky Henderson will not be Nolan Ryan's 5,000 strikeout, damn it. Ricky Henderson is Nolan Ryan's 5,000 strikeout. Get it right.
Yeah, you're talking about the greatest weed-off hitter there.
Yes. That's a fact.
I'll be here all week.
Now you know the secret weapon.
That is.
He was relaxed at all times.
So, Ricky Henderson, we really appreciate your contribution mm-hmm. to the sports world, and you will always be remembered by the KNC masterpiece for sure. Mm-hmm. The other wanker of the weekend, aside from death, is SMU Jet Flyers. There's no room in the inn. Did you hear about this, Alec? Mm-mm.
Saw a little bit about it, yeah.
Tell me about
this. The State College Airport in Pennsylvania, where Penn State is,
Happy Valley,
was so full, So many planes were there that several of the planes that were carrying rich SMU boosters got diverted to Williamsport. So they couldn't fly in and just go straight to the game.
The airport wasn't big enough.
They had to pile into a bus. All these rich people that flew in from SMU piled into a bus and missed the first quarter of the game. And for me, if I'm livid. I'm livid at that point. I'm missing the first quarter now. At that point, that was where all the excitement was for SMU, because from the first quarter on, it just got worse. Mm-hmm. But that would be the worst.
You've been waiting all these years for SMU to make the college football playoff, to be relevant again. You spent all that money, even though you got billions or millions or whatever it is, and then you can't get to the game on time because your G6 couldn't fit in the airport.
When we were in Vegas for the Super Bowl this year, as we were leaving out, the driver told us, he was like, yeah, all the personal jet locations are taken up. Everything in Vegas, there was no room for them to land their planes in Vegas, and that's wild to me.
Oh, and in Arlington? Arlington's airport, that's where all the G6s come in for the Cowboys games.
Really?
And whenever there's some big event at AT&T Stadium, it's not DFW, it's Arlington's airport.
Used to live right by it. I would hear all kinds of noise going over the house, you know, right before a Sunday game day. I'm seeing here too, Corey, where James Franklin was even complaining back in October about how that airport is not large enough. He said whenever they were going to Los Angeles for USC game, he said there was not enough space for them to get the whole team on a plane and to get out of there for a game that they have to be at and they have to play.
That is wild.
So this is a recurring issue.
You know what? They can keep it that way for all I'm concerned. Yeah. Next time SMU next time host the game. All right.
Let's make sure we turn it up a notch.
I'm proud of the boys for what they accomplished this year. Congratulations, SMU.
Yep.
Sorry it turned out the way that it did there at the end.
But they're in position.
Yes. Next here on the KNC Masterpiece, let's chit chat with our fella Mickey Spagnola, Dallas Cowboys insider, next on The Fan.